The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
We move to new research in America, which has found a way to plant ideas in dreams, resulting in a boost of creativity for the person when they wake. To talk through these new findings, I'm joined by senior author of the study, Ken Paller, from the James Padilla Professor of Psychology at Northwestern University in Illinois. You're very welcome to the show, Ken. Firstly, is it possible to explain in simple terms what the aim of the research was?
Sure, Claire. I'm happy to talk with you. The aim, there are, of course, several, but the main aim is to understand sleep better and to understand dreaming and its role in our waking life. How does what happens during sleep influence what we do in the day? And we think there's a big role for how our memory works. So learning takes place when we're awake, but continues on because our brain continues to work on the information we've acquired overnight. And there are changes we can observe the next day as a function of sleep.
So when our parents said to us when we were facing a problem, just sleep on it and deal with it tomorrow, that saying may be founded in real science. That's what we're learning.
Yes, and there's certainly a lot of evidence for that, but we want to understand more about how it works. We want to look at the brain physiology and see how these things come together. And there's a connection here between learning and memory and creativity and problem solving.
So it's so fascinating to see how you did this. So I would be given a puzzle while I'm awake. I haven't come up with the answer. And then what you want me to do in order to study what's happening is for me to go to sleep. But you're trying to prompt me while I'm sleeping to think about the puzzle. Am I on the right track?
Yes, you are. And if I can give you some background, another way you could do that experiment is just give people puzzles and then try to have them solve them overnight and see if they get the answers when they wake up. But if you did that, you wouldn't know whether the important brain processing happened before you went to sleep, as you were falling asleep, or after you woke up. So we wanted to target specifically dreaming during REM sleep. And that's why we presented specific puzzle cues while people were asleep.
So how are you convincing me in my sleeping state to think about the puzzle that I couldn't solve when I was awake? How are you creating the link?
Yes, we've been doing that, and many other labs around the world have been doing this for the last decade, focusing on memory processing. And so if you learn something, we can remind you of it while you're asleep. And usually we do that in slow wave sleep, a deep stage of sleep. And we can do that with sounds or odors that are connected to what you learned. And what the basic finding is from these studies is that if we remind you of something that you learned before you went to sleep during slow wave sleep, then when you wake up, you're better able to remember that information. So therefore, we have this method where we can use sounds to bring up specific memories. Now, we did that in this case, specific memories of unsolved problems.
So while I'm looking at the puzzle that I haven't managed to solve while I'm awake, are you playing a sound that you then play again when I'm asleep? Is that how it works?
That's exactly right. So everything you learned before you went to sleep came with a soundtrack. So each puzzle had a distinct soundtrack, and we made sure people paid attention to it so they could learn which soundtrack went with which puzzle. Of course, we could have also used the name of the puzzle. We could have said the words that go with the puzzle during sleep, and we do that sometimes. It's a little tougher because when we present these sounds during sleep, we present them very softly, and we don't want to wake people up. We don't want to disturb sleep. Mm-hmm. And if we present words, sometimes you just hear mumbles if it's not loud enough. And so we have to make it louder, and then we risk waking people up. So
and you don't
we
want
like
to
the
do
music
that.
Tracks. Yeah, we like the music tracks for that reason. You don't have to have it quite as loud. And it's interesting that you might think when you're asleep, you're blocking out the world.
Yeah.
And you're not acting in the world, but actually you're not oblivious to the world. And some of the sounds get in, and that's why this research works this way. So you might keep that in mind if you leave the TV on when you go to sleep. The adverts might be getting to you, and maybe that's not what you want.
So we have a level of consciousness during sleep that we might not be aware of. What is that level of consciousness? Can you describe it for us? How much are we aware of while we're sleeping?
Well, that is a tricky question to be sure about, but I think from a few sources of evidence, I think we're doing unconscious memory processing during sleep. So we don't necessarily have to be aware of that processing. It's happening without us knowing it, without us intending to do it, but when we go to sleep. But that's a normal mechanism of memory processing during sleep. Now, in addition to that, we have dreams. And when you have a dream, you are aware of the dream. That's how we define dreams. And sometimes you are also able to remember that when you wake up. But often we forget those dreams. So in this case, we wanted to provoke processing of those stories while people were having a dream. Though in a prior experiment we published in 2019, we did the same sort of thing, but we focused on deep sleep. So nobody had a dream about a problem or even knew that they were processing the problem. We think it all happened unconsciously. In this new experiment, we did it so that some people are actually aware of getting the problem because it happened while they were dreaming.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this experiment and your research, it's receiving a lot of attention online, and people are asking the sorts of questions like, could we reach a point like Inception, for example, where you can plant an idea in someone's mind in a dream, that you play a certain sound to make sure that you have a specific dream?
Yeah, the connections to the film Inception are pretty interesting. And, you know, in the film, the protagonists are entering people's dreams and interacting with them and implanting an idea is supposed to be really difficult. It's actually the other way around. We're not able to go into people's dreams and interact with them. But implanting an idea, that's not so hard. And we can do that. And we've done that in a number of other experiments where, for example, we had people have a virtual reality experience, and then we could have them dream about that experience again by reminding them of it. And so, yes, it's possible to implant ideas. Maybe it's not possible to change someone's mind. You can't make them think something they didn't think beforehand, mm-hmm. but you can give them ideas. And especially in this case, we're giving them ideas that they're interested in.
But maybe,
they wanted to solve these problems. They were challenged, and now they get a little extra time to work on them. And then the question is, does our dreamy mind have more creativity than sometimes our waking mind does? And there's good reason to think that that might be the case.
Okay, so that's one line of inquiry that I'm sure will be followed as a result of this. But also, just going back to what you said about not changing somebody's mind, but can you and might some actors looked to changing someone's belief systems? Like if you repeat an idea enough times over a certain period of time, and we don't know this, I'm sure, because the research hasn't been done, can you affect someone's belief system? You know, what they fundamentally stand for by influencing what they think when they're asleep?
Yeah, we don't know the answer to that, to my knowledge, but I think there'd be a lot of resistance. Work on hypnosis is similar. You can make people go along with something if they want to, but you can't always make them do something they really don't want to do mm-hmm. or believe something they didn't believe. But we should look at that, and I think we should be wary of whether this method could be used in ways that we think are inappropriate or unethical. We wouldn't want hotel owners to be able to play advertising to you while you're asleep without you even knowing they're doing that. So, for example, we have to really think about the ethical issues that would come up, such as the one you're talking about.
Yeah, dozing on a plane might have a whole new meaning, you know, if this were the case, if you could influence people through low-level advertising, perish the thought. But on the positive side, you mentioned there the unexplored potential of the creativity of the sleeping mind. That is something, is it, that you're interested in actively pursuing?
Yes, I think that people have a lot of creativity. And our dreams are kind of right there at the heart of our creativity. Maybe that's a source of our mind to be able to think outside of the box, to really go and create wild new ideas. And our dreams are sometimes like that. And various creative people can do that when they're awake. Maybe we can all do that if we can connect with the creativity of our dreamy mind in that sense. Mm-hmm. So there might be things to learn about yourself that you might not have understood. And we're also very interested in implications for mental and physical health. Can we get these methods to help us be healthier in various ways with people that have sleep disorders or nightmare troubles or various things like that? So we are looking at the important health implications.
And the subjects of this research, so they hear the sound or they smell the smell reminds me of the puzzle. They then, do they report in the morning that they have had dreams that they can remember about that puzzle?
Yes, that happened, but not necessarily coming up with the answer. So maybe they've restructured how they think about the puzzle a little bit. They don't necessarily wake up in the morning and immediately know the answer the way you remember a dream and know the answer. Although that could happen, so we're not ruling them out, that out. But more often, what happened is when people went back to the laboratory situation and were presented with the puzzle again and given 4 minutes to try to solve it, they were more likely to come up with the solution if they had had a dream about it. So something could have happened to think differently. And these puzzles always had kind of a dead end. They had one way to think about it that's not going to get you the answer, and you have to back up from that and think about it in a new kind of creative way to go on the right path to get the answer. And that's we think, what maybe was more mm-hmm. likely to happen in the people that had the dreams about the problems. It helped them restructure it a bit.
Dreams, Ken, are fascinating. I mean, I see that you've had some people who had a dream that they were in the puzzle. So if the puzzle involved a jungle, they were in the jungle fishing, or they were asking another character in the puzzle for help with it. I mean, there's a lot of inexplicable things in dreams, as has always been the case.
Yes, and an interesting dimension of that is a subset of people have lucid dreams, which is defined as knowing that you're dreaming at the time of the dream. And when you have that capability, which one can develop, then you have the option of using your dreams in specific ways. And one of the other projects in my lab now is to look at people who have been practicing that method in the context of a Buddhist contemplative practice that's known as dream yoga. So they intentionally go into their dreams not for the intention of solving a problem or having fun, but for some insights that they can gain into themselves and their own consciousness that can help them be different and perhaps better when they wake up and proceed as part of a contemplative, a broader contemplative practice. So we're trying to see if we can learn something from that we can then have anybody apply, whether they're meditating or not, to kind of gain something from their sleep. There are many benefits from sleep already, and we want to understand those benefits and enhance them if we can.
And how do you feel, or are you comfortable with the term dream engineering?
Yeah, I like that term. It's fun. You know, the Buddhist practitioners that were doing this hundreds of years ago, maybe they were doing dream engineering of a sort. They weren't using sounds necessarily, although there's some ideas along those lines, but they were using their intentions before they fall asleep. So I think we have various methods now to influence what happens during sleep and to get better sleep. And maybe the old-fashioned way would be you lay down on your pillow and you kind of hope the next 8 hours goes well. And there's no magic pill that can make that go better, but we do have other methods that might be able to make sleep more valuable for people. And yeah, let's call it sleep engineering or dream engineering.
And what do you think the function of dreams are?
Ha! Well, I don't know the answer to that. I'm sort of more agnostic. Various of my colleagues have various theories that have gone on. And I think dreams could be valuable in various ways. But I'm not quite sure what the single answer to that is.
That is Ken Paller, from the James Padilla Professor of Psychology at the Northwestern University in Illinois.
The Claire Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.